episode of Free Press Podcast. My name is Spencer Dobson.
And I'm Corey Heidelberger. In today's program...
Corey got some really hostile hate mail.
South Dakota also got hate mail from San Francisco. Nicholson wants money for Botox. Town halls, where are they? And in our feature, we'll talk to Ed O'Limpier about the Earth Day Fair in Aberdeen.
Well, let's start off. This was a letter that I happened upon while reading the Aberdeen American News. Claire Lopez was one of the speakers at the she was one of the anti-Muslim speakers.
Correct, on April 6th.
There was an anti-Muslim speaker protest that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And my friend Corey here wrote a little article about Claire Lopez and what she does. And he compared her vocal style, not her vocal styles, but her oratory styles to not being unlike a topless dancer or an erotic dancer in that they, and I would say maybe Snake Charmer would have also been an apt comparison in that she kind of hypnotizes people and kind of jingles a bunch of stuff in front of them, but there's not a lot of substance to it, and it's not really necessarily good for you.
Sure, pole dancer was the term I used, but I want to apologize to all talented pole dancers out there for that negative comparison to someone who spreads propaganda like this.
We'll get to that in a moment. I want to discuss strippers in general.
Goes our family rating.
No, we don't have a family rating. We're already on the left. We're terrible people, and everybody knows it. So here's the letter that you got. Women's rights are human rights, whether black or white or rich or poor, Republican or Democrat, man or woman. And that is true. We're all human beings that deserve dignity and respect in this day and age. Even strippers, I would argue. Corey Heidelberger's recent comments in the Dakota Free Press blog of female speaker Claire Lopez being compared to a pole dancer. Now, you did not compare her physically to a pole dancer, and you did not say what she does is dancing, and you did not say, like, one to look at her would assume she was going to pole dance. That's not what you said.
I make no comments on Claire Lopez's physical appearance.
Right. Other statements referring to her simply as a sex object. Now, that's just not true.
I made no implication about anyone who may or may not want to have physical relations with Claire Lopez.
And I hope Claire Lopez is having a lovely physical relation life. It's none of my business. Shows a level of disrespect not just toward one female, but towards all women. Our society should not tolerate this sort of sexist behavior from anyone. As the saying goes, strong minds discuss ideas, average minds discuss events, weak minds discuss people.
Hang on, Spencer. Who is Kathy Schoeneman discussing in this letter?
I think she's discussing you.
She's discussing people, right?
Is she discussing people? Here's the thing. What she's doing is using a false accusation of sexism to defend racism. So doesn't she open up with the idea that all people deserve to be treated with respect and dignity?
That's what I
heard.
But
apparently that does not include the Muslim community.
No.
Or anyone who practices Islam. Or anyone who believes in the truth, apparently.
Or anyone who Joe McCarthy attacked in the 1950s when he was wantonly throwing out vague and false accusations against anybody he didn't like, all in the name of this crusade against this conspiracy against the government. Yeah.
And it is entirely possible she just has really bad reading skills and possibly just read the headline or just picked out the words that she liked from the article and didn't actually read the article, which you can read on our blog. Now, in defense of strippers, because they really get thrown under the bus a lot. And here's the thing. We don't have that great of an economy. Also, people really like naked women. It has really helped the human race continue to this point was the desire for men to see women naked. And as much as the job is portrayed as degrading and depressing, I've met not only burlesque dancers, but actual strippers. And some of them are feeding a drug habit. And some of them are paying their way through school because, and I was talking with this about my wife, and she's like, well, I mean, if you look at them when they leave the job, they don't look happy. And I'm like, I don't know how much you hang around at shift change, but I have seen strippers leave the job happy. But I've also seen people walk out of their job at Walmart and McDonald's and whatever, and they don't look that happy. So until we have a perfect world, I think we maybe need to stop throwing the strippers under the bus. How about that?
Well, and I'll say this. I did not attend Claire Lopez's show, nor have I attended any strip club shows here in Aberdeen or elsewhere. And the thrust of the comparison that I offered may be more negative against strippers than Spencer may appreciate. And I agree. Some industries are exploitative. Some people enter them of their own free will and on they go. But my comparison, the thrust of it was a striptease show and these anti-Muslim slideshows both engage in the same charade. You put some exotic speaker up on the stage making these extravagant claims, claiming to let you in on these titillating secrets. And you have a bunch of people kind of sitting in the dark in the chairs feeling like they're hearing something awesome. And hearing this, viewing this show makes them more manly and more great. When really deep down what they're doing is objectifying others. The people at these anti-Islam shows, they're objectifying Muslims and just making them the enemy, the object of all their hate. Guys sitting at strip clubs, I'll go this far and say, I'm not going to pick on the strippers, but the guys at the strip clubs, a lot of them are just engaging in their fantasies. They're fueling their imagination and these false ideas of what real womanhood and what real manhood are. And they go home and they're no better for it.
I have two quick points. First of all, I would argue most men that go to a strip joint understand that they are participating in a fantasy, which is no different than going to a movie. Like a science fiction movie. Everybody knows there's no such thing as Chewbacca. Most people realize you're not going home with a topless dancer. She is going to show you what she's got, as is her right to do, which is, if you want to get religious about it, God's creation. I would say the people that leave Claire Lopez's show think they really got the real deal and translate that into actual hatred. And translate into actual laws and take action on what Claire Lopez says. So I would say Claire Lopez is far more detrimental to the human race. Now, on the other hand, there used to be a comedy show above, I don't remember the name of the strip club in Minneapolis. It was right across from Kieran's Sheik's, I believe is the name of the place. And for a large amount of money, you could go see a comedy show. And for even more money, you could sit with a dancer who was wearing clothes and buy her overpriced drinks. And there were men. I showed up one time and there was a guy standing at the door really mad because his dancer was sitting with another guy. And he had entertained that fantasy that this was a real thing and he was trying to purchase a real thing. So I guess illusion has power is my point. I guess people do believe what they want to believe. I guess we do need to be responsible. I would also say that nudity is beautiful and hatred is ugly. And there is definitely a difference between those two things. Point, and also I would say, I don't think your analogy was sexist. I think women do dance for money. It's not like you made that up. It's not like you pulled that out of thin air.
It does happen.
It's a thing that exists for real. And there's a whole movement of feminism that is like pro stripping. I think this woman likes to pick up hard, blunt objects and use them as she feels necessary without necessarily having thought them through all the way.
So just to check, I think we see our agreement on Kathy Schoeneman's letter that actually strip clubs and strip shows, striptease acts, might be less detrimental to society than what Claire Lopez goes around doing, telling people that Muslims are out to get us.
Absolutely. And also, I think a lot of strip clubs give more factual information than Kathy Schoeneman does about your article. Because it just says live nude girls outside, and you go in and there's live nude girls, where if you read Kathy's thing, one might be misdirected as to what one is actually getting when one was to read Corey's article.
Well, I won't cheer for strip clubs, but I will cheer for truth. Glad you read that letter, Spencer.
Absolutely. And strip clubs just are. It's fine. Don't try and when we try to shut stuff like that down, it just becomes worse. So you don't have to go, but get over it. Topic two. Governor Dennis Dugard says it's a concern that South Dakota has landed on San Francisco's list of places where city workers aren't allowed to go on official business.
Now, do San Francisco workers come to South Dakota on official business?
I think San Francisco workers go to all kinds of places with official business, but San Francisco is a very big city. California is one of the third largest economy in the world, I believe, third or fifth, something like that. It's up there. Point being, we're on a list that does tend to preclude, I think we try to keep it a little clean on here, a doo-doo storm. Would be mm-hmm. the family-friendly way to put that, in that if you look at South Carolina, which we'll post the article, they had their bathroom bill, and then they ended up on this list, and then it kind of became a cause célèbre, and then they lost about $3 million in tourism that summer. And we don't want to be that. I already have a friend who, you know, one guy not coming here because of these, because of this bill. And the bill we're talking about is the adoption bill, which says that if you are a Christian adoption organization, you do not have to put kids with homosexual couples.
Yeah, or with anybody who violates your organization's religious principles.
Like
so,
strippers.
Right. So, exactly. I mean, conceivably, you know, the bill was designed as a reaction to, you know, gay marriage and transgender people and that. But you're right, and ACLU pointed out that out when the bill came up. If you somehow contravene that adoption agency's religious principles by taking your clothes off for money or being an unmarried parent,
right,
you know, having a child out of wedlock,
right,
anything like that, or even just you don't go to the right church or you don't go to church often enough, mm-hmm. that could become grounds for denying you the opportunity to adopt a child. Mm-hmm. And in South Dakota, I learned this actually from I was talking to a same-sex couple about adoption, and they're involved in foster care. They're adopting a child out of foster care. Mm-hmm. And they said that in South Dakota, the state doing public adoptions, they only do adoptions out of foster care. If you want to adopt new little bitty babies who aren't in foster care, you know, just kind of the standard, oh, mom's going to give up the child, where do we get it?
Right.
The only game in town in South Dakota is religious adoption agencies.
Really?
Really, yes. So if you want to adopt a child and you're not Christian or not Christian enough, this new law that South Dakota passed says, well, your only option for adopting might be adopting a foster child through the state or hiring a lawyer to do that adoption, you know, kind of independently.
Right.
You can do that privately if you can arrange that. But of the private adoption agencies we have, every one of them in South Dakota is religiously based and thus could discriminate under this law.
Wow, that is pretty horrifying, especially you're considering, you know, these are kids that are looking for homes and these are parents that are able to provide them homes. And as we talked about before, we already have screening processes. They don't just go chucking babies at people. You have to jump over some hurdles to get there and show that you're a responsible person.
Yeah. Adoption isn't necessarily something that drives tourism. People aren't all flying here to South Dakota to get babies.
But people are not coming here to make a point.
Yeah. People hear about laws like this. They hear about attitudes, and that makes us look bad. And when you're competing for tourist dollars,
right,
you know, there are a lot of places to go. San Francisco's lovely. Arizona's lovely. Mm-hmm. Six Flags over Georgia is lovely, wherever that is.
Right.
There are all sorts of really fun places to go as a tourist. South Dakota shouldn't be doing things that make us look bad that then undo all of our great marketing about great places, great faces, great places, South Dakota.
Right. Here would be a great road trip. I'm going to go from Chicago. I'm going to drive through South Dakota. I'm going to look at all my stuff. I'm going to go to Colorado. I'm going to check out some mountains. Then I'm going to take my family home. But now we're not going to do that because we don't like the way you roll.
Yeah. And because we got one negative mention in the press. And I mean, this adoption discrimination bill is worse than just one bad news
article. Oh, yeah.
But the fact that, you know, when people are planning a road trip like you just talked about, they may not have any inherent connection to where they go between Chicago and Denver.
Right.
And so it may only take one negative mention where they go, oh, South Dakota's discriminating against the LGBT parents, to make someone in Chicago or New York or wherever,
or
Minneapolis,
New York,
say, well, why bother going to South Dakota?
Yeah, no, as soon as this happened, I saw people, I had a friend from Minneapolis who was like, we're not going on vacation in South Dakota this year because of this.
Yeah.
And again, it steamrolls. And we have a nice state full of nice people. This is a law that basically hurts people. It's based, you know, it's based on religious ideology, and that is not a way to write laws. I mean, you could say thou shalt not kill is based on religious ideology, I guess, if you want to, but it's also based on you just shouldn't kill people. We need them.
Right. Nobody I've met thinks that just generally killing people on a daily basis is a good idea,
but
regardless of your religion.
But to put up your adoption policy as, well, you're not on my team for the guy I believe that runs things from the outside of the universe that is the way I like to picture him.
Right.
He told me that you wouldn't be good with kids and I know better. Like, that's a ridiculous law.
Yeah.
It hurts people.
There are exactly. When hurting people, there are basic human rights at issue that we've always got to be mindful of. But we also have to remember that if we're not going to respect human rights, there will be folks like San Francisco City Council, like tourists everywhere who are going to say, they're not being good to people. Why should we bother being good to South Dakota?
Yeah.
Got to be
exactly
careful.
Exactly right. Let's move on to topic three. This one is so hard to get your head around. It's really dry. Votex, $9 million. What?
Yes. And first of all, I will apologize to my readers now because I still use the term Votex.
Oh, is that
Vocational Technical Institutes. Yes, apparently that's like referring to horseless carriages. They tell me they want to be called technical institutes, post-secondary technical institutes. But VOTEC is so much shorter, so I don't mind saying it. I'll take my lumps.
And VOTEC is a nice... VOTEC's got a good ring to it. Technical institute... Yeah, whatever.
I'm not worried about the terms. For some reason, VOTEC seems negative.
Technical institute isn't a race. Or yeah. A religion, or a sexual orientation. So I don't think we're being non-PC.
Sure. But for those young people in South Dakota who find that their vocation is to work with technical skills,
right.
South Dakota has four wonderful vocational technical institutes right. in Rapid City, Watertown, Mitchell, and in Sioux Falls, where you can go and get, I think they've got 1 year and 2 year programs in diesel mechanics, some healthcare fields, all sorts of
fields. But wouldn't
like
it be
that.
Cheaper to go to Iowa?
Well, it shouldn't be, because South Dakota is supposed to have the lowest cost of living and everything, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And we learned this Speaker of the House here in South Dakota, G. Mark Mickelson, representative from Sioux Falls. He was talking in the press about our VOTECs and our new Board of Technical Education that we created thanks to a vote last year on Amendment R, and then thanks to a bill they passed this year to ensure that the VOTECs are governed by a separate board. Mm-hmm. Not by the Board of Regents. They never have been, but they wanted to make sure this was clear. Mm-hmm. There's now a new separate state board that runs the VOTECs. Mm-hmm. Mickelson was talking about this board. And he said, well, now that we have this board in place, now it can advocate for $9 million more in funding for the VOTECs, because apparently over in Iowa, tuition at their VOTEC institutes is $180 a credit hour. Mm-hmm. Mickelson said that here in South Dakota, it's $230 a credit hour. So it costs, take your percentage or whatever, it costs $50 more per credit to get your VOTEC degree in South Dakota than it does in Iowa, which means smart kids in Sioux Falls who want to, you know, build things, work in healthcare, work in welding or whatever, they hop the border and get cheaper education in Iowa.
Now, is there a non-Republican solution to this that would make it super easy and just allow us to move forward with this and keep our students here? Because students also buy pizzas and hamburgers and sneakers and rent. And so they're kind of good for the economy, aren't they?
Well, yeah. The non-partisan, the just practical solution would be, let's make VOTEC education cheaper. Let's subsidize. Let's put more state support behind the VOTEC so that students aren't paying that money.
Wouldn't you have to use a little bit of tax dollars to do that?
Yeah, well, at least $9 million, says Mark Mickelson.
But don't we could get $9 million from, let's say, the Build South Dakota Scholarship Fund gives 600 full-ride scholarships worth $9 million. Well, that's right there.
The Build Dakota Scholarships, right. Those were founded 2 years ago. Those were founded to give full rides to students going into certain high-need fields.
Which is great. So maybe we should just raise taxes a little tiny bit somewhere else.
Raise taxes a bit for that. Or, you know, last year when we were talking about teacher pay, the people who resisted raising sales tax for teacher pay insisted that there was $67 million worth of fat somewhere in the budget. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting for them to shake those couch cushions out and find that $67 million. They certainly didn't find it this year. But theoretically, there are people who will tell you there's always another $9 million we can find. Whether we would shake it out of existing programs or raise taxes to do it, Mickelson's talking about $9 million that would go for a good cause, lowering the cost of post-secondary education for VOTEC students.
By the way, didn't businesses donate $458,000 for the Amendment R campaign? Isn't it possible that since these businesses would benefit from trained workers, that maybe we can get them to kick in a couple of bucks to help us train those workers?
There's definitely another good question. Businesses spend a fair amount of money lobbying. You know, they spend money to promote that ballot measure that the legislature brought us. They spend money on lobbyists and peer to promote their interests. And then they count on the state to pay for what you could say basically is job training that specific businesses maybe ought to be doing themselves. Businesses, you know, you can make an argument that businesses shift their costs over to the state by having the state pay for the tuition for students at the VOTECs. Now, personally, I don't mind. Whether it's the state paying for it, the business is paying for it, we can talk about what the proper ratio is there. Either way, it makes good sense to help students stay here in South Dakota and get that education.
Which benefits the whole state.
Yes. Helping students get a cheaper education here than they can anywhere else.
Right.
Keeps more kids here. It builds their skills here. It means that at least for the 2 years there at Lake Area or Southeast, they're buying their burgers and their gasoline and their groceries here in South Dakota. It also means that for a couple of years, they're getting part-time jobs here in South Dakota. They're getting work connections here in South Dakota. And they're maybe that much more inclined to stick around here and do the job.
Well, there you go. Let's go in depth now. Okay, here's the thing, man. Let's say I want to go talk to my people that are running the government. Let's say I want to talk to like a congressman or something like that.
Typical thing to want to do in a democracy.
But
yeah.
And they had a town hall, but then it was like, God, you posted it like 5 minutes ago, and you're surrounded by all these like cops, and it's like intimidating and weird. And like, I'm not a big lawbreaker. I'm a pretty upright guy, but I know a lot of people who are citizens who maybe smoke a little pot or something like that. And they just, for whatever reason, aren't necessarily comfortable in an environment like a police station for whatever reason. But they're still citizens. They still vote. What's going on? Wouldn't it be nice if you just held a town hall that was maybe at a place where they had muffins? And people could just go get muffins and a cup of coffee and just maybe chew the fat with you a little bit. Or maybe they're mad at you because you're making ridiculous choices and you've supported a terrible president who is making terrible choices, who seems to only be there to get people to go to Mar-a-Lago and to sell chocolate cake and to get his daughter's jewelry business up and running and going well. What if I want to engage with the people that are empowering that person and speak my mind to them? Why would you? It seems like that should be something I should do and be able to do easily and without the threat of being roughed up by the popo in a democracy. But that's not the case, is it?
And you've summed up a lot of the frustrations that I've heard a lot of people in South Dakota expressing over the past month or so with regard to the town halls or lack thereof by our congresspeople. Can give you, well, four examples. Christy Noem has held one major town hall that I've heard of in the past month, and that was at the Watertown Police Station. This is back in March.
Mm-hmm.
She announced it on Friday afternoon. It was scheduled for Saturday. Okay? So Friday afternoon, you know, keep in mind, this is now past the publication date for the Friday paper. Maybe it comes out in the Saturday morning paper. Maybe people catch it online. But it's also Friday. And I know this from the blog. Fewer people log on to read the news on Friday night and Saturday morning than pretty much any other time of the week.
Well, that's a news cycle trick. If you're trying to get a story to be ignored, you have the press conference on Friday because everybody's distracted by the weekend plans.
Everybody's out. So Christy Noem has that that town hall, has it at the Watertown Police Station, even though she says her team scrambled and looked around and no other rooms were available, 6-7 sites weren't available, part of which makes me think, if I'm a congressperson and I've got staff, I put them on the job to find a good room for a meeting that can fit lots of people. We do that a couple months ahead of time. This isn't a hard thing to do.
You do that if you want people to show up and ask you questions.
Oh, yes, I forgot.
If you don't want people to show up, if you don't want people to be informed, if you don't want to have a back and forth, then you do it on a Saturday, you announce it on a Friday, and you do it at a place that's kind of intimidating to go to. And this is a broader strategy. Well, this is why you don't have good voting stations in minority districts. This is why you try to make it difficult for people to register to vote. This is why you block motor voter and you go against automatic registration when you register for the draft, because when fewer people vote, Republicans win.
And when fewer people show up at your town hall or know about it, then fewer people can participate and make their voices heard, whether in questions or in outright protest, as we've seen in town halls elsewhere in the country.
And it makes it hard for the media to get the soundbite of the woman crying, saying, "When you take away Obamacare, you're killing me."
Right. Yeah. Because it's not just regular folks who need some notice. The press needs notice of these events too.
Right.
The press, if they've already assigned their reporters to stories for Saturday or for John Thune, for instance, who came to Aberdeen. I think he announced his town hall on maybe the Friday and said, "Yep, I'll be in town Monday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon when most people are working at the police station."
Right.
Maybe the news outfits have already assigned their reporters to a trial that's going on that day or something like that. Everybody needs notice of these.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't give notice, well, you can't participate. Or when you take the Mike Rounds approach. Mike Rounds is actually, he's scheduled two town halls, at least that I've heard of, during the Easter break here. They get 2 weeks off for Easter. My daughter got 3 days off school for Easter. Mike Rounds gets 2 weeks. But Mike Rounds scheduled a coffee and conversation. He scheduled two of them. One was at a Murdo Cafe last week. A picture from his Twitter feed shows six people in attendance.
Okay.
This is out in West River. He has another one coming up this week, I think on Thursday, at the Muffin Tops shop in Falkton, down the road here, hour or so from Aberdeen. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm all about politicians going out and having town halls and doing them in the small towns as well as the big towns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Rick Weiland, when he was campaigning for Senate in 2014, he went to every small town in South Dakota and went to a lot of them twice, went to the small towns and the big towns. Some people would argue, well, just focus on the big towns because you get more people done.
Sure.
But everybody's a South Dakotan. Even if you're in Murdo or Falkton, you deserve to hear from your senator too. Right. You shouldn't have to drive to Sioux Falls. At the same time, if you're home for 2 weeks and the only two public advance notice events you have are in two small towns that, you know, particularly Falkton, you're kind of out of the way there. You're certainly away from the interstates and everything.
Sure.
That raises questions about just how eager you are to talk to the voters and hear from the voters and take their message back to Washington. Mm-hmm. There is a larger pattern there. Not holding town halls, not interacting with people. That shows you don't want to hear the voice of the people.
Right.
Voter suppression shows you want fewer people voting.
Right.
You just want to get your way and go do it without being held accountable by the voters.
Yep.
In South Dakota, ballot measures. We see this from the South Dakota Republican Party, wanting to make it harder for voters to do ballot measures, having to get petitions in earlier, and then even repealing them or tinkering with them when we get them to appear.
Right. Right.
In there, all, I can see a bigger picture there of politicians not wanting to listen to the voters.
And respect the will of the voters,
and respect
clearly.
The will of the voters, right. Which I'll throw in one PS here.
Okay.
We do have a new Democratic candidate for U.S. House.
Right.
Who wants to run for Kristi Noem's seat.
Oh, great.
The seat she's vacating so she can run for governor. But a guy named Chris Martian.
Okay.
Looks like Martian, but it's pronounced Martian. He's from Rapid City. He's never done politics. Never run for office, let alone hold an office. I had a great interview with him last week. Got to talk with him. Seems like a decent guy, just a regular citizen.
Okay.
And he's not a big policy wonk, but he said, you know what? I'm really frustrated this year with how hard it is to get a hold of our representatives.
Right.
To hear from our congresspeople, to get information from them. He said that issue by itself, the, you know, the few town halls, the hard to get to town halls, has inspired him to run for Congress.
Well, and he's a tech guy, and he's also really interested in protecting your internet privacy, which is a huge issue right now.
It's something they voted on in Congress. They've actually Noam, Thune, and Rounds all voted against it, taking away some of our privacy. Yeah,
I know. And that sounds like a great interview. They can find it right here on the podcast.
Yeah, we'll link underneath that, and you'll hear Chris's take on... Or we'll read Chris's take on kind of this lack of public interaction that we're getting from our congressional delegation. Something Chris and I think Spencer and I all agree needs to be changed.
And with that, we have an interview this week. And it's a really interesting one because of Earth Day is coming up this weekend.
And Saturday.
We've got, you're going to have a big march.
Well, we're having a March for Science.
Yep,
at 1 o'clock at Central Park. But the Earth Day Fair, even bigger, is going on there at that same time.
Right. I will be doing comedy professionally because I have a magical life. And I'll be driving my coal rolling truck. No, I'm just kidding.
I'll take pictures for you. Don't worry.
I don't drive a coal rolling truck. So, you know, Lynn Veer, he's from Green Aberdeen. And we sat down and talked to him the other day. And here's that.
My name is Reverend N.O. Lynn Veer. I pastor a church 3/4 time over in Ipswich, South Dakota. Coming up 5 years this summer, I married Kylene, who used to be Kleberg, part half owner of the Red Rooster Coffee House. Mm-hmm. And so we've been living here in Aberdeen for the past 5 years. And about 3 years ago, I read a book, Naomi Klein's This Changes Everything. Before that, I've always been conscious of the global warming and stuff, but this book kind of got me off the bench, so to speak. It says her main point on it was it wasn't going to be governments and the UN who are going to solve the global climate crisis. It's going to be the local communities. And that's what that whole book was about, was around the world, all these different local communities standing up to big companies, standing up to government and saying no. And so I said, all right, time for me to get off the bench. So I started asking people around Aberdeen, where's the local environmental club? And everybody's like, there really isn't one. One over at NSU at the time. And I said, well, I'll help them. Wasn't one there. And I said, okay. So I started talking to people. if I put together a meeting, if I start a meeting, will you guys come to it? And so I think we had 6 people at our first meeting, 10 people at our next meeting. And that's been about the average, you know. Sometimes you get a few new people come in, some people drop out, and we've been meeting about once a month.
What does Green Aberdeen do?
Right now we say we're a group of volunteers who are trying to make Aberdeen green. For different people, that means different things. The two biggest reasons people get involved is either the Moccasin Creek. They want to see that cleaned up. That's always one of the issues. And the other issues is recycling, particularly with glass.
Two things. First of all, let's pretend I'm new. Why is Moccasin Creek dirty?
Part of the problem is that they say, you know, I heard someone describe it. It's a very long lake. The elevation goes down very slowly, so it's a very slow-moving body of water.
Okay.
And so it doesn't flow, and so it's hard to clean itself because it doesn't flow fast enough. Also, the treatment plant that's all south is that it actually reverse flows. I'm not sure about that, but that's what I hear, and so.
Okay.
Yeah, and then people generally, you know, they just had the first responders go through and just pull, you know, I was on the front page a couple weeks ago.
Right.
And they pulled all that junk out of there, you know, so people kind of use it as a dump site. Yeah.
So it's just be nice to have a clean creek.
Yeah.
Now, glass-wise, I just took a bunch. My wife has a glass of wine from time to time, so I ended up walking into Target with a grocery bag full of empty wine bottles, which looks unsavory to say the least. why is there a reason why? Because I was just out at the recycling center yesterday, and it always drives me nuts that I can't drop off my glass. What's the deal?
There's two ways that we could get recycling of glass. Target does recycle glass because their central shipping is from out of Iowa, and Iowa has a buyback program.
Okay.
So when they send their trucks here, they go back empty. So if they load it up with glass and recycles, they can resell that. And so that cuts down on their fuel costs.
Oh, so to check that, I mean, that sounds interesting. Target isn't actually spending more money to recycle this glass. They're just using trucks that are already coming here to Aberdeen
and
that would otherwise be deadheading back to their warehouse or wherever.
Right.
Well, fascinating. What a solution.
That's super green.
Yep. And so, we were there yesterday in Target, and we had our own bag, and the lady behind the counter, she filled in a plastic. Hey, we forgot to give you our bag. And she's like, oh, this is great. You know, she was like, oh yeah. And you should bring your glass here too. And we're like, oh yeah. Yeah. You know, we do. And even like Presentation Sisters, they take their glass down there, you know. So households and even some businesses, you know. And I don't know how big, you know. There have been, you know, some people say, you know, we really need to talk to them, and we haven't done it yet. And you know, as any kind of official capacity to say how much could we do? I mean, if we could set up some kind of collection, I mean, could we be sending back a few hundred pounds, a few tons at a time? I don't even know how much they do.
But so Green Aberdeen, you haven't coordinated with Target yet.
Yes.
But that's certainly a project you could do to organize glass collection and maybe take a whole truckload at once, make it more efficient.
Yep. Second thing on that, so to recycle glass in Aberdeen, if we could get the state legislature to do the buyback program, boom, a problem solved across the state. The other part of it is that Mike Erickson of Dependable Sanitation, his closest buyer is in St. Paul, Minnesota. So he has to truck that over there. They are picky on it. So if it's not a percentage pure, then he trucks it over there, pays for all that. And then he has to either truck it back and dump it here in the landfill anyway, or pay to get it dumped over there.
So
for him, it's a wash at best because he has to truck that far. So,
Eno, you mentioned that, like, the glass buyback, and maybe seeing if we could get buy-in in peer for that idea. In Iowa, where Target takes their glass right now, who buys the glass back? Is that required by the state?
It's in the state statutes that you have to, that the companies who produce glass products have to buy back and recycle it to use it again.
Right.
And so.
So if we did that in South Dakota, who would be the buyers? Are we talking like your Coke and your Pepsi bottles?
I am not 100% sure, but I believe it would be whoever uses glass in manufacturing would be.
Sure. And have you gone down that road yet, looking at, you know, Green Aberdeen doing some lobbying in peer?
Nope, we have not.
What we hope to do after Earth Day Fair is that we have four areas that we want to look at, you know, because everybody comes to it in a little bit, you know, so it's hard to have one meeting a month and try to cover all different areas. So we're hoping that we can get some teams put together, a team that wants to do community cleanup, because they're, you know, okay, let's go clean up the log at a different time, and or let's go, you know, go to the parks and those kind of, you know, our help a community garden somewhere. Let's go plant a community garden. So we hope that we can get a team that can do three or four of those events a year.
Right, and that's what's coming up here this Saturday, April 22nd, right?
Yep. So this will be our second annual Earth Day Fair. It'll be down at the Briscoe Building, which is on 224 First Avenue, and then we're also expanding it into Central Park this year.
Sure, yeah, you're right across from Central Park.
Right.
Yep, okay. Yep.
And I'm guessing if people go to the Earth Day Fair, would that be a good place to connect?
Yes. Yes, we will have a booth set up, and we will have a sign-up sheet for these teams. So as I said, one is community projects. One is information events.
Okay.
You know, getting the word out and getting information out. You know, hopefully we can work with the NSU Environmental Club, which is now up and running, and bring in speakers to NSU and make that a community-wide event and say, here's the facts on what's happening with global warming. Here's how it's impacting not only our coastal cities, but here in South Dakota. And this is what it's going to mean for the future. Here are ways that we can make our community more green. The more we get to know each other as neighbors and as a community, the more we're going to be willing to make those sacrifices and put things together. And then the fourth one is policy, such as here in Aberdeen, we do not have a system for the people in apartments to recycle.
Right.
They have to bring it out there.
Right.
It's a five-year lease. It's coming up next year in the spring of 2018. We've talked to Lynn Landers, and he says, if you want any improvements or anything, you know, or any additions, you have to have it in by October 31st of this year. And one of the things we're looking at is we've talked to a couple councilmen, council people, to change some of the ordinances to allow people to put recycled dumpsters on apartment complexes and those kind of things.
But it's doable. It's just an ordinance,
it should be
right?
Doable, yeah.
Why should people get involved?
I read an article a couple of weeks ago that said that worldwide we produce 1 trillion plastic bottles every year.
Mm-hmm.
And about a fourth of them, 250 billion of them, end up in the ocean. But it does break down, but it breaks down into molecules, but it's still plastic.
Right.
So those, and there is no more molecules of plastic in the ocean than there is plankton.
Wow.
You know, so the whales that
right.
the whales that feed off the plankton are now, their bodies are being filled up with plastic and all the other fish. Mm-hmm. And so all the fish that we eat now that's harvested in the ocean contains plastic. And so that means we are ingesting and we are filling our bodies with plastic.
It goes through the whole ecosystem, does it not?
Yes.
This affects fishing, this affects hunting, this affects the whole.
And like you're saying, it's these kinds of chemicals in the bottles or whatever, they don't break down into something useful. There's no point at which we can compost all those plastic bottles or anything.
Yes.
And looking down the pipe, I mean, obviously we don't have an overpopulation problem in South Dakota at
no.
the moment. 100 years from now, who knows? Why create a garbage problem?
Yep. My personal goal is, you know, it's a 30-year program, and if it does happen in 30 years, it'll be a miracle, but you have to shoot, you know, but my goal is that within 30 years, you know, give or take a decade, that we are a zero waste community, so that everything that we use can be used again in some form or fashion, recycled in some form or fashion, and carbon neutral. So that means, doesn't mean that we get rid of all the cars, but we have become such a local, eco-sustainable community that any times where we have to use, you know, use the plow trucks to move the snow, you know, you're not going to, yeah, we don't have the technology. My Prius is not going to plow out the snow. But that we will have all the offsets with the greening of the trees, with you know, having homes and businesses being run on renewable energy of wind and solar and geothermal and, you know, those types of things, so that we are a sustainable community. And that's being done around the world.
You know, you talk about, you know, your personal vision, and it's an interesting long-term vision of a zero waste sustainable community. But you mentioned at the top you're also a pastor in Ipswich at the UCC. Is there an overlap or, you know, a connection between that ecological vision you're talking about and your call as a pastor, your theological perspective?
If you look in the Bible, you know, and they said, well, the earth is cursed, you know, and so that's why some Christians out there believe that the earth is cursed. And so we don't have to really pay attention to it, or you know, it's in the opening of, in the first creation story, 7 days, is that we are given dominion over it. And that means to dominate, you know, so this is ours to use as our abuse as we want. But if you look deeper into it, you hear, every time the earth is cursed, it isn't cursed because it's the earth, it's cursed because of human action. So the getting kicked out of the Garden of Eden and saying, you know, the toil, that wasn't, you know, before it was supposed to be the vision of the Garden of Eden, that we would work in harmony with nature and we would care for it. But because we broke our covenant with God, the earth suffered for it. The story of Noah and the flood. It wasn't that the animals were being bad and God says, let's wipe out the earth for the animals. No, it was the story of we were not taking care of each other. We were not being in covenant with God. And so it was because of our actions that the earth was flooded. And even in Isaiah, when it, you know, it's when it says you're adding house, you're adding land to land to land, so that you're the only house in the area, you know, it's talking about monopolies. And it's saying monopolies are not good. And so because you have monopolies now in Israel, because you're at the height of wealth and power, but you're not taking care of the people, you're not taking care of the land, you're not honoring the Sabbaths, and you're not allowing the earth to regenerate itself, that is, you're set up for a fall.
Would you say in the United States that there's a biblical interpretation fight that is going on that is trickling down into pragmatic environmental issues?
Oh, yes.
Do you feel that, how do you feel the Christian left, are they standing up? Are they taking it to the streets? Are they trying to create some balance here to because the other side is very loud, it seems like.
Yes.
And they seem to be doing a really good job of getting people in power, and their agendas seem to fold over really well into making a lot of people a lot of money, and also doing a lot of harm. I guess, how's it looking on your side of the fence?
Last fall, I did a thing over in Sacred Heart, and I can't remember which priest was it is, but he talked about Pope Francis's encyclical on the earth, you know, and Pope Francis is very much pro caring for the world, pro acknowledging that the earth is being destroyed by humankind.
And that's new, right?
Yeah. You know, so the Catholic from the top down, they're saying, hey, we need to take care of the world. We need to take care of the earth. The earth is a valuable resource in and of itself. It's God's creation. And so we need to find sustainable ways of living, and we need to work in harmony with it. You know, so there's just over 2 billion Christians living in the world of the 7, and over half of them are Catholic. So hopefully, you know, so that's slowly trickling down into local communities around the world. So it is not just a left and a right thing, you know, because on some issues, you know, the Catholics are very right-oriented. On some issues, Catholics are very left-oriented, you know, within the political system of the United States. But there is the narrative that this world is cursed and that the world is going to come to an end, and it's going to, sometimes Jesus is coming back. So, you know, so why should we bother to recycle? Why should we bother if half of the animal species have been exterminated over the past 200 years? Because, you know, in heaven, new heaven, new earth is coming. So God is just going to restore all that stuff. So,
but doesn't, and you would know more about this than I do, but doesn't it say that we're the stewards of the land?
That is also in there, yes. The world's first profession was farming, taking care of the Garden of Eden. I mean, it was to watch over, it was to care for it, it was to live in harmony with it. It wasn't to take everything you could out of it, and so, God's going to give you something better later.
Stewardship is a really important word, I guess, in your theological approach to the environmental things you're doing.
Yes.
I'm curious, I was thinking back to something you said earlier about kind of monopolies and maybe the economic structure that leads to the problems we have with the environment. It sounds like, you know, there's more to it than just consumers recycling their glass. We need kind of a shift in how big business, how the whole economy does business. What have you seen from a Green Aberdeen perspective that either you can encourage corporations to do or your businesses to do, or that you've maybe seen them already doing that's helping with your goals?
One of the big pollution problems for us in America is food. The average food that you buy at the grocery store has traveled 1,300 miles. So that means it's been shipped through trucks or through ships coming, you know, and over trains, you know, so that's carbon being thrown into the air.
And all as part of kind of the corporate, the big agriculture, you know,
and most of that stuff is controlled by a few corporations. About 10 years ago, the big four companies controlled over 60% of all food production. One company, Conagra, they control half of all food transportation between countries. And when I heard this was happening around Enron, you know, when Enron kind of blew up. And I'm like, well, if they kind of blow up, you know, does the United States of America have enough pull to help food get to where it needs to be? Because half of it's controlled by one company.
Same way you're saying, like when Enron, they were in control of energy production or distribution, and then their corruption and scheming collapses, that people go, yeah, blackouts. We don't want to have a food out if ConAgra falls apart, is what you're saying.
I did.
Those rolling blackouts were on purpose, though.
Right.
So that's part of it. Part of it is that low estimates, is that 40% of all food grown is thrown away, either before it gets into the market because it's ugly fruit. You know, no one's going to buy ugly fruit. And so there are communities that are saying, okay, we have, you know, here's our nice looking produce, but, you know, here's our ugly bin, you know, that we'll sell at a discount, but we'll still sell it so that it's, that the only thing's wrong with it is it's not that appeasing to look at.
Aren't there countries, didn't France just pass a thing where they can't throw food away, or they have to donate X amount of food?
Yep. France just, they just put a national law in that the restaurants, at the end of the day, they are no longer able to throw that food away. They have to either donate it to local food pantries or, you know, or those kind of things, or co-ops. And also for us, you know, and we're as guilty as anybody, is that, you know, you go to the store and you buy a whole bunch of food. Oh, I'm going to eat salads this week. And then by the end of the week, yeah, I've eaten out a couple times, and this stuff is kind of... So the food that gets thrown into the garbage dump, that starts decomposing, which is good, but it creates methane. And, you know, so that gas is then being, that gas is a greenhouse gas.
Yeah.
So it's a greenhouse gas. And so that is contributing into our global climate change.
Hold on, Anna, hold on. You're telling me my compost bin is creating global warming?
Not your compost bin.
Okay.
Because compost is a different thing than having it buried. You know.
So we're still safe. We can keep composting our old salad here in the garden.
Yes.
My wife will be relieved to hear that. Thank you. And tell us. It sounds like there's a lot people can come learn about at Earth Day Fair this weekend, Saturday, April 22nd. Give us a quick rundown again. Who else are we going to see at the Earth Day Fair? Who can folks stop
to talking about food waste. So here we're talking Emily Newton. She's a new dietitian over at the YMCA. She's going to be doing a talk specifically on food waste. She's going to talk and give us all good advice about, here's how the way you can eliminate food waste in your house.
To be green in the kitchen.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
In the kitchen, you know, so that we aren't, because often when we get the food home, we kind of throw stuff away. And we're also having Margaret Holman James come, and she's with Easton Castle Altella Conservancy, and she's going to be talking about suburban forests. So those are our two speakers we have. We have entertainment, Better Ride, is going to be playing at 1:00. Joe Burns and Friends is going to play at 2:00. Raven, is going to play at 3, and then the Bethlehem Praise Choir with Ron Parker. He's going to be closing us out at 4 o'clock.
Great. So entertainment all afternoon. You've got informative speakers in between there.
Yep. And then we have the Chamber of Commerce is going to have a booth down there, and I've been working with the partners in Community Pride, and so hopefully they're going to, you know, set. And so they've been interested in this issue for Aberdeen. Presentation Sisters, the Downtown Aberdeen Association, they're going to be there, and they're going to be promoting the farmers market, and we can buy food here locally rather than having it shipped in from California or even Chile. You know, it does save.
Well, and that's encouraging because, I mean, you're listing off people who are going to be at this. And, yeah, we've got musicians. We've got speakers on, you know, environmental practices. But you've got the Chamber of Commerce, for Pete's sake. You'd think the Chamber of Commerce is kind of the corporate beast at the heart of it. But even they're saying, no, there are good things about recycling. And the Downtown Association, they're saying, we can make some money with good local food, with good green practices.
Yep.
Well, that's really encouraging to hear. We've got kind of, you know, all sides of the community finding ways to buy into what Green Aberdeen does.
Yep. Just to throw out another statistic. Sure. Right now, there's about 70,000 farmers in the United States. You know, it used to be that about half of all American, in the 1800s, half of everybody was a farmer, or half the population is a farmer. Now it's, I don't even know what kind of percent it would be. Very much less than 1%. But Professor Fred Kirschman from, and I can't remember which university in Iowa, but he said by the year 2050, projections show that there's going to be 20 to 40 million farmers in the United States.
It's going to increase.
It's going to increase because it's the pendulum. We're way over here where everything's on the kind of corporate side and big farming, and let's get the bigger tractors, and it's starting to swing back, and it's going to go local food. And so it's the Detroit City where they have taken out whole blocks and they're now farm fields in the middle of Detroit City. It's the farmers market that's starting here that is happening all over the United States.
We're Americans. Isn't there an economy here? Isn't there money to be made by unscrewing things up?
Yes. People are starting to demand that. You know, I want to know.
Solar panels, for example. Somebody's got to make windmills.
You know, we have fiberglass molding who makes
turbines.
Big turbines here, you know, and, you know, so that's a business that is driving our local economy.
And didn't Elon Musk just invent roads that work, that have solar panels in them? I know they're working on roof tiles that have solar panels in them. There's no shortage of things that people are coming up with that, you know, it helps the economy. It helps you live here. It helps, you know, helps you to have breathable air. I want to throw out the George Carlin quote that I think really sums up all of this the best, which is, the earth is going to be fine. We're all going to be dead, but the earth will be just fine. So don't think you're saving the earth. You're saving us.
And I enjoy George Carlin. he would be considered in very much ways a modern day prophet because
absolutely.
He called it as it was. And he was able to see with clarity, you know, what many people would say, that's, you know, no, this is great. And he's like, nope, this is the way it's really happening.
Right. Yeah. I think the moral of that story, though, we need to live here. We need to be able to breathe the air. We need to be able to eat the food. We don't need to be swimming in our own garbage. We don't need the whales to wash up on shore because all that's in them is plastic. So we have to do the work. And you're facilitating and educating and making it possible for people to do that.
Yep.
So thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Edwin. Tell us again, Earth Day Fair, when and where?
It is this Saturday, April 22nd, 1 to 5 at the Briscoe Building, 224 First Avenue South and at Central Park. And as we said, there's going to be booths there. There's going to be activities, entertainment. Also, Lois Beckner from the ARC is organizing an art show for adults. So we're going to have local artists displaying their stuff with Earth Day theme. And also we have it organized that the kids also are going to be putting on an art show. We're going to intermix those two places, and so that's going to be in the back room of the Briscoe Building.
Awesome. Green art, green food, Green Aberdeen. N.O., thank you for visiting with us today.
Thank you guys so much.
Great interview, N.O. Thanks for hanging out with us. All right, Progressive Happy Hour. Is there a Progressive Happy Hour this week?
There is a Progressive Happy Hour. We'll go Friday evening at 5 at the Ward. If you'd like to talk progressive politics or any politics, come join us for a drink, join us for conversation, and join us maybe to even talk about what we can do to make Aberdeen and the world a little better.
And once again, come down for the March for Science and Earth Day, and that's happening at...
That's at Central Park, right from next to Old Central and next to the Briscoe Building in the center of Aberdeen. We'll march around Aberdeen at 1 p.m., and then stick around after that. We'll come back to Central Park, and you'll be able to go to the big Earth Day Fair that N.O. Linvier Green Aberdeen is spearheading. Talk about making the Earth better.
Also, if you're enjoying the show, please throw a couple of bucks in the tip jar. If you go to Dakota Free Press Podcast, the webpage, you will see that there is a little tip jar on the sidebar. You can throw a couple of bucks there. Also, if you want to listen to previous episodes, now if you go to the top of the website, there is a tab that says podcast, and we keep three podcasts on SoundCloud, and then the rest of them end up
on YouTube. Yep.
And if you give us enough money, we'll just keep everything posted on SoundCloud, but right now that's too expensive, so we're not going to do that.
But we'll take cash tips, we'll take tech tips as well. We welcome suggestions on how to make these podcasts and our content better available to all of you out there. We're happy to share.
Having said that, I think we got another one in the can.
There it is. Thanks for coming over, Spencer. Glad to be on the show.
Thanks for having me, Corey, and thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.